Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, on this rainy, miserable, icky Sunday night, April 15th, to Dave's Gone By. Hello, Jeff Goodman, my co-host for this evening.
Hello, and every highway is no longer a sunrise. Every highway is now a river.
Now, how was it driving here from...
Not a problem at all, Dave. It's really calmed down.
Yeah, it looked like the past couple of hours it's barely been much of anything.
I left my house. It wasn't even raining.
Meanwhile, do you know how many inches we had the whole...
They said 5 inches in the city, but I'm not sure about how many inches out here. I think it depends on...
if it was a woman doing the forecast, she was hoping for a couple of things. I have to do the inches joke. It's de rigueur for a radio broadcast.
Well, in my neighborhood, it was very big.
I don't even want to know what that means. Speaking of big, we have so much to do on the program. Let me tell everybody.
Don't let me stop you, Dave.
Oh boy, I'm so excited.
I have a feeling we have a phone-in, a live interview coming up.
Yes. Not only we have an interview, a really cool interview. I'm excited about it. And also, we have Inside Broadway, where we're going to talk about a couple of big shows I saw on Broadway this week, including Vanessa, you should pardon the expression, Redgrave, appearing in The Year of Magical Thinking, as well as Kevin Spacey, who's doing a revival of A Moon for the Misbegotten. Also, actually not quite a happy, exciting thing, but the sad thing of saying goodbye to a couple of wonderful people who died this past week. I'm going to say farewell to Kurt Vonnegut and to Don Ho, and also you want to do a kind of a goodbye to the actor Roscoe Lee Brown, which is just to thank them for the good pleasure that they've given us over
sharing their time on Earth with us, and time and talent.
And speaking of time and talent, we'll also, if there's time at the end of the show, get a little bit more into the whole Don Imus thing, because that certainly has not gone away. All of that, plus the big phone guest who's going to be with us in just a minute after we thank our sponsors, because we wouldn't be here without them. Jeff, you want to do it?
We'd like to thank MortgagesRock.com.
You betcha.
Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And Fancy Schmancy Balloons. I'm remembering my own little plug.
Okay.
And, of course, the Dave Magazine, as I like to call it.
What would the Dave Magazine be?
That would be Theater Arts Insider.
No.
Performing Arts Insider.
Thank you, yes. Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners.
I'd say make it 20 if they call in the next 15 minutes.
No, don't call now. Because we're going to be on the phone.
If they log in the next 15 minutes.
Now, if you've been a listener we've been on the air for about 4.5 years now. But just a year ago, or maybe about 13, 14 months ago, we had a guest, a musical guest, someone who was one of the most popular pop rock bands of the 1960s, which is to say, of ever. So he was one of the... Yes. What is it, Jeff? Your eyes are dilated. And you're like,
I just want to know which one of the Beatles were here.
No, it's not one of the Beatles. No, and it's not...
Elvis? Was Elvis in the building?
Elvis was not... They say this building is haunted, but no, Elvis is not with us, nor is the spirit of Don Ho is with us, but Don Ho, unfortunately, is not.
But there are no tiny bubbles.
No, there's lots of big bubbles in the puddles out there. No. This is way cool. A year or so ago, Peter Tork was on this program, one of the beloved monkeys from TV and music fame, and was talking about all sorts of stuff, about his life, about, of course, being part of the band, about his new band, which is called Shoe Suede Blues. And so, you know, it was way cool. And now he's going to be appearing in a club in Patchogue on April 20th, so everybody can get to see him and the band locally here. And not only that...
That's like this week.
That's why we're doing this.
Right. I kind of want to accentuate the fact that April 20th is only 5 big days from now.
That's right. It's also Hitler's birthday, but we won't get
into that. Is it really?
Yeah, I think so. Hitler and Joe Salzone. We hit in both days.
Who's Joe Salzone?
He's a guy who's been on the show. I'll explain later. Anyway, Peter Tork, are you there?
Hello. Yeah, I'm here.
Is this late for you, or is this...
No, I've been on the phone for a half an hour waiting for you guys to notice me, that's all.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you guys ahead of time to billboard this thing a little bit longer so everybody could call their friends and say, he's on the air, oh, for goodness sake, he's on the radio and listen.
Well, we
did that actually earlier because Rise and Shine was canceled due to weather.
There was a show on this program on this station called Rise and Shine, and of course it's been storming and pouring here, so they didn't make it. So nobody rose, nobody shone. They just
we talked about you for about an hour, though.
Well, we did mention that the fact that
we promoted him for at least half an hour. Come on, who are we kidding?
We did indeed. So Peter, how have you been doing since last February when you were on Dave's Gone By?
Let's see. Since last February, and incidentally, not some club in Patchogue, if you guys don't mind. Patchogue Theater for the Performing Arts.
Oh!
Let's get serious.
That's a beautiful theater.
It is a lovely theater.
It's big.
Uh-huh.
Are we going, Dave?
What? No, I'm nodding. How many inches is it? Since we're
talking.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's very large. It's beautiful. Have you been there before?
Well, isn't that where they had the first annual Long Island
The Music Coalition. Yeah, I think so. So you have.
And I did that. I was there for that. I had a great time there. And the interesting thing is that we're going to have a rather nice backup act. Three folk singer lady type singer ladies with a very good and some belly dancers.
Ooh,
just for the fun of it. The flyby by the Royal Canadian Air Force
in the theater.
Live things. All four F-16s will be coming soon.
That'll be a buzz.
Yeah, and are the Garucci's handling that, or I don't know, but
not Garucci's, Garucci's.
Garucci's, excuse me. But wait, aren't you also going to be the opening band? Isn't that mostly Mop Top?
Oh, that's the support act, right? We're going to also have, but the Aura 3 is the name of a. This is a band of women who tour with us often.
Oh.
Partly because our manager's in that band, so.
Okay. Well,
and one of them, only one of them plays guitar, but she also plays bass and harmonica at the same time.
She plays guitar, bass, and harmonica?
Yeah.
One-woman
band kind of thing.
Wow.
Okay.
Ask her if she can put cymbals on top. I like when the cymbals go up and down on the bass drum.
Either that or those Irish Ewillian pipes. I think those would be really cool if she could do those and the drum. You know, in like Riverdance and the Pirates, they've got that swelling kind of... you know what?
Can we talk about me?
Yeah, okay. Enough about you. Let's hear about you.
Enough about.
Well, I did ask you what you've been up to in the past year.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, since I was at the Long Island Fair, we've Shoe Suede Blues, which is about all I'm really interested in doing. I mean,
And it's two suede blues.
No, shoes. It's like a blue suede shoes.
Hang on. Shoe Suede Blues. He said it right.
Shoe Suede Blues.
Yes.
The Shoe Suede Blues Band.
Very clever and it's
very
hard.
Our first name was the Shoe Suede Blues Band. We have since changed it a couple times. It's now officially Peter Tork and Shoe Suede Blues.
Change is good, Peter.
The idea being that rockabilly period that the song is referenced, and that rockabilly period was a time in the history of music when five or six major different kinds of pop music were all the same. Soul and country and blues and rock and R&B all were being played on the same stations and overlapped, and each one informed all the others, and everybody listened to all of them. It was like a wonderful moment for those of us growing up at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And a moment that has actually grown much greater in retrospect for me. I must say at the time I was very cynical because I grew up in a classical household. You know, my dad was playing Beethoven's Fifth and Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto and that kind of thing in the household.
Wow.
And I kind of like was looking a little askance at this rock and roll stuff up to a certain moment. Then suddenly I'll tell you what it was. It was Elvis Presley's "I Want You, I Need You, I Love You." I don't know if you remember that song.
I do.
Yeah, but you saw him on Ed Sullivan, or you just saw him where?
No, it was just the record on the radio. That's all. And yes, I saw him on Ed Sullivan, and I saw him on Steve Allen, which was the competing Sunday night show at the time.
And
I saw him on the Dorsey Brothers show, television show.
And since has your father come around to realize?
No, my father never got, and my mom, they never got into. My mom was a. It's interesting because my mom was a swing band era music fan. She loved the jump boogie swing stuff, and danced when we were younger. She used to dance around the living room doing the Lindy Hop. My father, he didn't give us a hard time about it. Neither did my mom. They just didn't get it. To my way of thinking, a lot of what the rock and roll came out of the swing band era and was rocking for the same reason. A lot of the stuff we do, Shoestring Blues does some swing band tunes. There's a great, great band called Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five, not to be confused with the French actor Louis Jordan.
No.
Louis Jordan's great an R&B pioneer, really. A small group, short songs, jump, dance, swing stuff, novelty tunes, very clever, very classy. And we do a few of his songs. B.B. King does a lot of his material, gets a lot of his material from the Louis Jordan songbook. So we go all the way back to the 40s and through the 50s and 60s and 70s, and some new blues that we've written and a few covers. And of course we have to do some Monkey. No, I take it back. And of course we delightedly and happily do some Monkey songs. We do. We actually enjoyed doing those a great deal. But I don't know if you guys have heard the CD.
Not yet. We're looking forward to it, but it hasn't quite gotten to us yet.
I'll be doggone.
But it sounds like this is a show for like all ages and any music interest.
This what we're doing? Yeah. Oh yeah, we've been very lucky. We've had teenagers come at us and throw pieces of their clothing at us.
Count me in.
Actually, usually it's a spare piece that they were going to throw away anyway. But it's still.
Do a little Tom Jones.
Yeah, the Tom Jones thing. All that we have like 3 and 4 generations come at us. I didn't mean quite like that, but come to the show and all seem to be enjoying themselves. We have a wonderful range of attendees. And I recommend the show to, 6 years old, bopping.
Wow.
60, bopping.
Okay. Speaking of which, I'm kind of curious at this stage in your life and your career, how much of your life is still devoted to writing, performing, singing, doing concerts, doing albums, and how much is devoted to hobbies and personal life and stuff like that, like in percentages or something?
Oh, gosh.
And you can round off to the nearest 1 or 2%.
Yeah.
You guys are so generous. I actually have to say that the amount of energy and time in my life I spend on Shoestring Blues comes to about 35% or 40%. That is not my choice. I'm not writing as much as I want to be. I don't know what that's about, but there it is. I'm not writing as much as I want to be. The band isn't working as much as I want us to work. We're working on that working thing.
Well, what do you think is keeping it from going to 50%?
Oh, I don't know. Time, energy, and publicity machinery and that lucky break, you know, you're waiting for. The lucky break, as anybody who's been in show business will tell you, is absolutely a function of being, the expression must be present to win.
Mm-hmm.
You can't win if you don't play, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the lucky break is absolutely a function of working the game as hard as you can. And that's what we're doing. We're just working this game as hard as we can. We adore to play. We love hanging out with each other. We love hanging out with the crowds. We love we love the whole thing. We knock our own socks off, actually.
It's good. You enjoy
the frightening show right there, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but we're kind of seasoned musicians, so maybe it's all right.
I think it's great. I think you have to enjoy what you do. You have to enjoy your own performance. Otherwise, other people enjoy it.
Yeah.
I hope so. It's a little bit scary for me to say that. I'm afraid people are going to go, well, doesn't he think highly of himself? We're not going to snob and do that kind of that kind of number on you.
So you'd like to appeal to all our influential listeners out there?
to show
up. Oh,
yeah,
that's right. Anybody with a lot of influence, please come and bring your money.
Stop throwing the underwear. Throw the greenback.
Yeah, right. Forget the panties and the bras.
I'm curious what your feelings are about the explosion of these reality shows like American Idol and the dance shows where people are trying to get famous in that way. Which in some ways happened to you. I mean, you guys weren't known at all, and then boom, you were on TV and famous fairly instantly.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the American Idol phenomenon?
Well, you're asking me two questions.
Okay.
But I don't pay much attention to American Idol per se. What I get from what I hear about it is that it's about half about cruelty, mockery, which is to me cruel, and the other half is a more or less legitimate talent contest, which is fine. Reality shows in general, what I think about reality shows in general is that that's the fad du jour, and they're cheap, and they get people attending, and they get people involved, and so it's good business for the networks, and it's not happening much on cable, so it's a way for the networks to get back some of the cable audiences, and that's about the only thing I notice it as a business phenomenon. I don't have an opinion about it one way or the other.
But would you enjoy Sanjaya in the band?
I actually have never heard him sing.
That's probably good.
I have seen photos of his hair, but that's about as far as that goes. I'm kind of amused by and secretly rooting for the sort of contrary campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Stern?
Yep.
Somebody is campaigning really hard. Put Sanjaya on there. Make him win when he was invited as one of the cruel, apparently invited in as one of the butts, the cruel joke things. You know, we're going to make fun of this boy.
Right.
And everybody's going to love us making fun of him. And then have him win. And it's just like, okay, you know, the people taking over the plan, which always,
right,
always.
That's very true.
The backlash.
Because
yeah.
They always like invite one or two kind of poor singers in so they can tell him how terrible he is for at least a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then again, think of the most famous people to come out of America. I mean, you've got Kelly Clarkson and folks like that, but also who doesn't love William Hung? And he was a joke, and he made a career.
Who?
William Hung. Remember the Asian fellow? Well, you're not that familiar with the show.
I'm not that familiar with the American Idol.
He was a very bad auditioner who then got a record contract because he was so bad but very sincere.
You've probably seen him doing it. She bangs.
You don't have the talent.
Not his talent, thank God.
Oh, my God, not to have that much talent. No, I don't know that particular phenomenon. I'm not aware of that particular guy.
Okay, we have just a couple of more minutes here with Peter Tork, the one and only.
What?
But we underestimate our time, Peter.
Well, we got like 5 minutes. We're not going to let you go so soon. I want to get to the personal stuff, the good stuff, because last time you were on the program, I think you mentioned that you were dating some people, but there was nothing serious. And has that changed? Is there a special in your life now?
Two or three.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah.
Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. No, I am... Nothing is secure in that department yet. My choices are beginning to, I'm thinking more and more fondly about settling down.
And the choices dwindle down to a precious few.
Yeah.
September, November.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, would you actually marry?
That song has it wrong though. Somebody wrote it from the point of view of an old age. You know that song says, when I was a young man, courting the girls, I'd play me a waiting game. If a girl refused with a toss of her curls, I'd let the old world take a couple of whirls while I plied her with tears instead of pearls, and I played me a waiting game. But I don't have time for that now. It's just not the way it is. When you get older, you have more time. I don't know how it is. When you're young, you're in a hurry. You want it now. When you're older, you're more patient. You're ready to wait for things.
Well, because we're older now. It takes a little longer.
And how many inches?
Exactly. Growing by the minute, Peter.
No, stop that.
No, the rain. The rain counts.
Oh, the rain counts. Oh, okay. Fine.
Well, you were asking about the weather, right?
Yeah.
He's hung up on us.
No, I'm sorry.
No. There, just there for a minute. But no, and also, you're going to get this every single show you go on, every single time you're on, everywhere, but gotta ask, what's new with the other guys? Are you going to, is it going to be a reunion? How are they doing? Are you in touch? Blah, blah, blah.
So that's the question. Hey, hey, how are the monkeys?
Yeah.
I saw the other two of the other guys recently, just for a minute each. I mean, we were in the same room for a couple of hours.
Name names, Peter.
Together. Well, the name to be named is the loss of our the bands and our individual bass player.
Oh.
A man named Jerry Renino died a few weeks ago.
Oh, no.
Basically of not being able to ask for help is the way it looks to me, and I won't say any more about it than that. Mickey and Davey and I all showed up at his funeral, and Davey and I both spoke. He was a lovely guy. We were really sorry to see him go. But Mickey and Davey and I each had a handshake and a quick hello, how are you, and that kind of thing. But mostly, we were just there for the to pay our respects. And beyond that, we have not got much contact. It was good to see them. I enjoyed, I was glad to see them personally, just directly. Davey seemed to be pretty cool, Mickey was actually quite distraught. I was amazed. We didn't have any conversation, not a three-way, no two-way conversation, just, hi, how are you? And as for certainly the 40th anniversary reunion is, the chance for that is long gone. As of right now, it's probably too late to start a 41st.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has indicated any interest in any reunion whatsoever. I mean,
really?
Yeah.
That's very surprising.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't have to be an anniversary thing. People would just be happy to see you guys, together, no matter what.
Well,
I think you should talk to
Rosie
O'Donnell.
The other thing about that is that once upon a time, interestingly enough, Shoe Suede Blues opened for the Monkees.
Really?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
How long ago was that?
A couple, 3-4 years ago. It has to be longer than that. What was it? It was 97 or 8, I guess, so 8 years ago.
Almost 10.
And it was really great. I wore a sunglasses and a loud checkered yellow jacket, a mauve tie and black shirt and a Panama hat. And I was introduced as Beltway Guitar Slim on guitar. There were apparently a few recognized me, but Mickey said that, during the, when the Monkees did Daydream Believer, where whoever was the opening act, the opening act came out and joined us, Daydream Believer with us. And so Shoe Suede Blues came out while I was there, and they brought out my yellow jacket and shades and Panama hat. And I put them on, and Mickey said there was a gasp from the audience that nobody had noticed that it was me up there, or at least a good third of the people didn't know it was me. So it was a lot of fun. Great playing both ends of the show. Tiring. Wow. Who knew?
We had two full sets.
Yep, two full sets.
And not to get heavy or anything, but you were very, very open, last time you were on the show about your past stuff and things that were going on. And now you mentioned, of course, that musician who didn't ask for help. Not going to go there, but I do want to ask you, still clean and sober, still, et cetera, and so forth?
Yep.
Congratulations. Yay!
Yeah, and that, to carry on the point, is a lot of people, when I tell people I'm 26 years without a drink or drug, willingly partaking of anything, I've been spiked a couple of times, and
oh, that's nice. Really? That's a real friend.
Yeah, it's a real friend. But I'm not a friend, handing me a drink or anything by accident. But I had a cheesecake that was made with Grand Marnier one time, and it took me about 3 bites to recognize it. Who makes cheesecake with liquor, for crying out loud? and somebody made ice cream with Armagnac or something in it. And I thought, who makes ice cream with Armagnac?
Rich people.
And both of those cases, I really got. I felt first time it happened. Anyway, so it's been 26 years since I had anything willing, intentionally had anything.
Yeah.
And when I tell people this, sometimes they go, "Gosh, man, you must have a hell of a lot of willpower." And I tell them, "No, it's not about willpower. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. As long as I was relying on willpower, I was doomed. I was absolutely doomed. It wasn't until I was able to surrender my willpower and ask for help that I was able to quit." that which I had not wanted to partake in for 3 or 5 years. I'd been trying to quit drinking for 3 or 5 years, and I couldn't do it until I hit bottom and became painfully and excruciatingly aware that I had no further control, and then I was able to surrender and get the help I needed. And it's been a function of the help and not the willpower. So this is, a word to the wise. If anybody is interested in what's going on with their lives and why they keep on behaving in ways they don't understand, it's not up to me to change my own behavior. It's up to accepting guidance, really, from, I don't want to go into names here. There are people who will use words to tell you where the guidance is coming from, and I don't want to do that particularly, but I had to surrender to something or someone that knew better than I did how to do it for me.
With that in hand,
I've been able to stay sober all this time, and it's been, it's been a blessing, I'm telling you.
Oh, I'm so happy for you.
Thanks very much. Here's one more little thing.
Sure.
What most people don't realize is that for alcoholics of my type, if you are abstinent, if you're clean and dry for a number of years, and you take up drinking again, you don't take up where you left off. Within a very short time, you are where you would have been if you'd been drinking continuously in between. So if you're on a long downslope and you get off it, and 5 or 10 years later you get back on it, you are much further worse, much worse, and much further down the slope than you were when you left off. So if I took up drinking right now, I would be, I heard stories about people who lost their house, their wives, their home, their job, their car, career, money, everything gone within 2 or 3 days of picking up.
Wow.
So I hope I never do, because if I do, I am bloody doomed, I'm telling you.
Please don't.
Yeah, no, it's much better to have you the way you are and happy and turning to music and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So where do you see yourself in, God willing, the next 26 years?
Well, 26 years from now...
Mm-hmm. Which nursing home do you prefer?
I expect not to be... if I'm doing any performing at all, it's going to be... They're going to wheel me on stage on a dolly.
What would her last name be?
And how many inches are we talking about here?
That's exactly. Where's that comedy bell when you need it?
So I actually seriously doubt that I'll be performing 26 years from now. But 10 or 15 years?
Okay.
Yeah. 10 or 15 years, I see it. I still see it.
And where do you see yourself in 4 days?
In 4 days, I'm Patchogue Community Arts Center and Performing Arts Center, and rocking and rolling and slamming the blues. And we play some real, real blues. I mean...
And where can they get tickets and stuff?
Oh,
like
yeah,
that?
Good thinking, man.
Actually, I don't know.
Oh.
Well, I guess at the Patchogue Performing Arts Center, for those of you who are down there, you can probably pick up tickets.
I haven't checked. I wonder if there's it must be on the website. That you can buy tickets on any reputable online ticket dealer.
What's the website that they can get in touch with?
It's petertork.com, I assume.
I don't have a connection for tickets on my website. I do have the exact name of the venue and date and time and some of the opening act. Those things are going to be there for sure, as well as other things we're doing. We'll be in New York City. We'll be at near Patchogue. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's why I'm a little confused, because I have here actually that you're going to be at Polygene Supper Club in Isetawket. We may be confusing dates here as far as the Patchogue Theater.
Okay, I have the web page before me. Let me. Yes, Isetawket is the 20th.
Right.
And that's got the mop tops, the mostly mop top performing. And that's at 10 o'clock in Isetawket at Polygene's.
Mm hmm.
I don't have an address on that here before, phone number here before me. And then on the 21st, which is Saturday,
that's
the Patchogue Theater Performing Arts. There we go.
Cool. I'm glad we were able to
much better
everybody.
Day of the week, too, Peter.
Yeah, Friday. Well, it's a funny thing. I remember as I was growing up, I don't know if it's still true, but the working folks went out on Friday night and the professional types went out on Saturday night. So I don't know if that's still true, but it'll be great to have the gang out at Paula Jean's on Friday and the toss at Patchogue Theater for the Performing Arts.
Two chances to see Peter Tork and Shoe Suede Blues.
Wait a minute. And then...
Yeah. And then...
The next day afterwards, Sunday...
The
22nd, we will be doing a CD release party at the Beauty Bar in New York City on 231 East 14th Street. So if you're in the city...
What time would that be?
What
time is the party at the Beauty Bar?
We don't know. Basically, that one will be Catch as Catch Can, 9 and 10 o'clock. They'll be playing the CD continuously on their PA, and we'll be chatting with folks and signing autographs and saying hello and passing out party favors, I suppose. I don't know.
Ooh, party favors.
Indeed.
How long are these party favors?
Well, those are in centimeters. They're European made, so they're smaller. But anywho... Oh, Peter Tork, it has been, again, a wonderful pleasure to have
you so much
in the neighborhood. Best of luck. Best of luck at Polo Jeans. Best of luck in Patchogue. Best of luck at the New York Club where you're going to be.
The Beauty Bar on East 14th Street. And I want to talk about the Daves of our lives.
Oh, that's so kind of you.
Okay. Okay, I'm out of here.
Have a great night.
Thanks so much, Peter.
Thanks for your time and the plug and the chance to rabbit on about the things the way I do. And I hope to talk to you guys again soon.
It would be our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye, man.
Bye.
Peter Tork, ladies and gentlemen, on Dave's Gone By. Yay!
Wasn't that exciting?
It was a blast. He was fun the first time. He's fun the second time. He's welcome anytime.
And he's a nice, nice man.
Yeah. Everybody, welcome back. Well, no. What am I saying? Well, I'm so excited. I'm mangling words here. Come on back, because we've got Inside Broadway coming. We've got a couple of, like, bye-byes to do to some folks who left us.
This week.
Some great, great folks. You know, Kurt Vonnegut, Don Ho. Gonna miss Vonnegut a little more than Don Ho, but both of them, really. I don't know if we'll have time, but we do want to get a little more into the whole Imus thing. So please do not go away. So, you don't have satellite radio, you don't have an iPod, or 100 music channels on your cable. Doesn't matter. Live365.com has dozens of radio stations in all sorts of formats absolutely free. And one station, DFSX Radio, plays vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Saturday night at 11 Eastern Time. I've even put their link on davesgoneby.org. So just click to hear music and talk and me free on DFSX. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Yes, it's Inside Broadway, ladies and gentlemen, on this April 15th, the segment where we talk about Broadway theater, and sometimes off-Broadway, too, but it's a Broadway night, ladies and gentlemen. I've got Jeff Goodman here with me in the neighborhood.
Hello, Dave.
But because Jeff was in Florida this past week, he wasn't really able to see some of the shows that I ended up seeing.
Sadly, yes.
Sadly enough. Well, one of them, I think he missed something pretty cool. Another, so let's start
with
I'll
catch them later, Dave.
Well, yeah.
Just like all our listeners can catch them later.
If they want to, of course, yeah.
They should. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, why should they catch the bad and the ugly?
Just so you know how good the good is.
Good point. You'll need some frame of reference, as it were. So let us begin. By the way, the person who called in, sorry, we couldn't pick up because we're doing this now. But
we're just too popular for you, sorry.
Maybe call back during the I Miss segment where we can take phone calls and actually talk to you guys. So anyway, this week I saw The Year of Magical Thinking, which is a drama, one-person drama, although I use that word a little bit advisedly, because it's almost more of a monograph. It's more of staged reading, because all the words are pretty much taken from the book by Joan Didion.
But she's not reading, is she?
No, she's not. But she might as well be. She sits through almost the whole thing.
And we're talking about Vanessa Redgrave.
Vanessa, the Zionist hoodlum lady Redgrave. No, I have never forgiven that. If black people can't forgive Imus, I'm not going to forgive.
No, but not all blacks. There are a lot of black people who can forgive Imus, especially the women's basketball team.
Uh-huh. I understand that they forgave him. And look, I'm going to see Vanessa Redgrave. I've seen her in, what was it, not the Rose Tattoo. She did a Tennessee Williams play on Broadway. I went to see that. I saw her in Long Day's Journey Into Night. I didn't think much of her. The critics rave.
Right. But you have to
treat her. I'm not boycotting her.
But you have to treat her as an actress, not a political figure in this respect.
I am. Okay. And as an actress, she's perfectly watchable, and she does a very, very fine job, but I found the show pretty boring.
Okay.
It's a true story. It's the story that Joan Didion wrote when her husband, who, you know, they have this perfect, nice life, this great apartment in New York. They're rich, they write for the movies, write books and stuff like that. And they're fine, and everything's great, and they're having this planning their meal for the night, and then he suddenly keels over, blood starts coming out of him, and by the time they get him to the hospital, I mean, he's got nothing left, and then she's suddenly dealing with, like, this whole change in everything, in her whole life. Not necessarily the lifestyle, because that's not effective. They've got the money, but just, you know, you lose the husband, this soul partner, this work partner, this everything. And then, on top of that, her daughter becomes deathly ill.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
Poor Joan Didion.
At the same time. I mean, while all this is
horrible.
Her daughter ends up having this accident. And I mean, one of the more interesting things, I mean, the ironic, dark humor of it, true stuff, was like she's in the hospital, essentially in a coma, but they don't know if she can hear anything or sense anything.
Oh.
So they're saying, please don't put the television on, because on the news, her father's death is going to be broadcast, and if she is conscious under the coma, and I know that's we don't want to.
So she went into the
news.
Coma before her father died.
Yeah, she did. I probably got the time frame wrong. Okay,
but anyway, it's about.
But she outlived her father.
It's a really, really big change in this woman's life. It's about two gigantic events that really made her year.
Yeah, but the irony of what I'm getting across with that is so. They tell the nurses, don't put on the TV. And so they come back the next day, TV's on. They tell the nurses, do not put on the TV. She's in a coma. We have to tell her when she comes out that her father's dead. We don't want her finding out like this. So the next day they get back, and the TV is off. And there's a sign on the TV that reads, "Father dead, don't turn on." It's like the best moment in the show. I mean, it's such a darkly humorous, typical kind
they
of thing.
They couldn't, like, put a sign saying, "Don't turn on the TV."
Yeah, exactly. They had to be like, so there are things like that. It's a well-written piece, but it is static. Because, A, everything's in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, B, I mean, that does not have any kind of a happy ending. The woman has one illness and two deaths to deal with, and how she gets through it. But
It sounds like it would probably make a better play than monologue, basically. I mean, to make this a monologue, I guess it's a cheap thing to produce.
And you have a one-woman show with a stature. It's the kind of thing Julie Harris used to do when she was in a little better shape.
Mm-hmm.
So they got Vanessa Redgrave to do it. But to me, the other thing that annoyed me about it is, you know, I guess in the book, the specificity of her lifestyle makes it kind of personal and things like that. But on stage, she got her Prada bag and this bracelet from Tiffany and this on the line. And it's rich porn in some way. It's always these things that rich people have and do, and it's getting in the way of really feeling for her. I know it shouldn't, but it was sticking in my craw a little bit. You know,
you got to get this stuff out of your craw.
I understand it's saying even the rich have trouble. But I get that. I don't need to hear every little thing like, oh, this particular blue dish from somewhere that we got from this famous screenwriter. It's like, enough. I don't want to know. Sorry. And it was like blah. It was like boring. It
wasn't so magical for you.
It was not. I was not thinking magically by the end of it. But there was some magical work done on Broadway this week and ensuing weeks at the Brooks Atkinson Theater in a Eugene O'Neill play being revived.
Really?
And I'll tell you all about that right after this message. There is a season, turn, 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 turn the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, because this is the season for Broadway. All the big shows are opening in the next few weeks. Learn about them all. For 64 years, Performing Arts Insider has been the Bible of Broadway. Find out why by going to PerformingArtsInsider.com. Subscriptions are 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. So turn, turn, turn to Performing Arts Insider for every show under heaven. Yes, every show under heaven.
Well, I turn, turn, turn. That's how I knew I've missed the openings of Magical Thinking and the next show we're going to talk about.
I don't get it.
Well, don't you list upcoming shows and opening nights in Performing Arts Insider?
That's right. Oh, in other words, you
and
saw them in the
next. And I brought my Performing Arts Insider with me to Florida, so I might call some press agents.
Oh, very good. Did you get to, or would things
no,
too
I didn't.
Crowded?
No, I did. But I did turn. I was reading it, and it got my mind off of things, so that was good. And it brought my mind back to my favorite subject,
which
is Broadway.
Broadway.
So that
and you
good.
Do. You should see it. I'm glad Charlie. When Jeff refers to Charlie, he means Charlie Gross, his co-host.
That's Charles Gross to you.
Charles Gross, the co-host of Two on the Isle, a program on Manhattan Neighborhood Network. That's a New York cable TV outlet. That their show has been on for about 12 years now, biweekly.
That's 17.
No, is it really?
Yeah.
17 years?
I think so.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It feels like 400.
Now. Yeah, but meanwhile, you're still great friends with Charlie. You guys went to see the Pirate Queen this afternoon, so you know.
And we went for coffee after.
We have to have something after the party. Anyway, that's for another show. Let's get to A Moon for the Misbegotten.
She is the Pirate Queen, oh yes. Oh, wrong show.
River Dorks. Anyway. A Moon for the Misbegotten. It's the Eugene O'Neill, one of his masterpieces, directed by Howard Davis. It's an English production that Kevin Spacey started over there. And then
Howard Davis or Howard Davies? I was always Howard Davies.
I'm pretty sure it's spelled
really?
Davies, but the way the English pronounce it, it's Davis. I
oh, that's like,
wrong.
What's his name? What's the actor whose name is always pronounced wrong?
All
he
of
did
them.
Hamlet. He did Hamlet recently.
Ray Fiennes.
Yeah.
Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes. Yeah.
So, anywho.
So I've been mispronunciating.
Howard Davis, yes. Anyway, he directs a cast that includes Kevin Spacey, who's looking, obviously, to get his career in the States back on track after that Bobby Darin movie and some other stuff. So he went over to England, helped found a theater company, or took over a theater company.
Took over an old theater company.
Yeah,
well, the old Vic.
Something, yeah. And so one of the things they were doing was this production of A Moon for the Misbegotten with Eve Best actress that was really unknown over here, playing Josie Hogan, the female role, and Cole Meany. I think he was in the Commitments, I believe. He was one of the people in there. But if you saw his face, you'd know him. Cole Meany is playing the drunken father in Moon for the Misbegotten. So,
I probably know him from something else. But I like Kevin Spacey for, if nothing else, for one big reason.
What's that?
We have the same birthday. I think we're exactly the same age.
Such an egotist. Well, what's the birth? No worse than me, but, yeah.
We're both born October 30th.
Yay!
And Harry Hamlin, too.
Okay, good to know. Can we
continue? Don't you know who's born on your birthday?
I used to think Bogart was, but I'm not sure now. I was. Born on my birthday.
This is Bogart.
May we get back to A Moon for the Misbegotten?
Yes,
we don't have much time.
And he also does a great Captain Kirk, by the way. Have you ever seen Kevin Spacey do...
On Saturday Night Live?
Anywhere. He used to have a whole big comic monologue. He did Captain Kirk on... Yeah.
That's cool. You can tell he has a sense of humor. He's just a little kind of a spiky personality there. And if anybody saw him in The Usual Suspects, that's really the place to see. What a wonderful performance
in
that film.
He's a really good actor.
Yeah. He is. And the problem in A Moon for the Misbegotten is he knows he's a good actor, and he's acting all over the place. And he's...
Does he chew the scenery?
Yeah, in a very odd and quick way. And I think he's taking certain things too... I wouldn't say literally, but he's working the metaphor rather than the text. Which is to say that O'Neill is right out there. If there's subtext, the characters 5 seconds later come out and say it. So it's not subtext anymore. And then if there's subtext under the subtext, the characters say it too.
Yeah, it's pretty open. Now, also the fact that a lot of O'Neill plays are over 3 hours long.
Right. This one isn't.
Okay.
No, it should be. But they bring it in at about 2:50. Why?
Well,
because Kevin Spacey rolling along and he's talking like this a lot of the time. Because it's what
you ever get. Do you ever feel the length of the show, or is it because it's such a good production you don't feel the length?
I should say, first of all, that this is one of my very favorite plays. Over the years, it's grown on me tremendously. Moon for the Misbegotten is a beautiful play. And for anybody who wants to see it in an almost perfect incarnation, get the video of Jason Robards and Colleen Dewhurst.
Mm-hmm.
Robards is up and down. He's kind of an overrated, even in this role. But Colleen Dewhurst as Josie Hogan is one of the greatest performances I have ever seen, ever, anywhere. It just rips the heart right out of you. It's fantastic. Nobody's, I don't think, ever going to beat her. And the woman here, Eve Best, doesn't, but she's good. And she's smaller than you would figure that character would be, because it calls for a big bone kind of homely-ish woman. And when she first comes on stage, and she's talking with her brother, I'm thinking, this is going to feel like a good college production. And my heart starts sinking, she's okay, and she feels like she's going for the motions, but not really, living it. But as the play goes on, I believed her. I felt that she was feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
With Spacey, it's the actorish stuff. He's playing, Jamie Tyrone disappears into his Broadway shtick mode. Because he's a former actor.
Right.
He's letting himself, he has let himself go seed through drink. But he still uses the acting stuff. But in the first act, what he's doing, what he considers Broadway, is so effeminate that I was thinking, oh my God, they're going to play the subtext now that James Tyrone is gay.
Oh, really?
And you can read it that way in some weird level because, A, he's very connected to his mother, he loves show tunes, and he sleeps with all these tardy women, but he loathes them. And all he's looking for is a mother figure. But it doesn't... You can't play that through the whole play. And then he doesn't. In the second act, he switches gears.
Uh-huh.
And instead, he starts playing the fact... Again, you can find it in the text, that he's a child. He's essentially a 2 or 3 year old about to be reborn, born through Josie. Because one of the first lines he says in the play to her is, "You're going to mother me, Josie." And eventually, and what happens is he starts toggling around and throwing himself around spastically during his most important monologue.
Dave, can you do me a favor and tell the audience a brief synopsis of the play? Don't give away any of the twists and turns to the ending. But I think people who go to see this should know it, should have a good idea of what this is all about.
It's a pretty simple plus. I mean, there are little twists and turns.
But people are usually afraid to go to O'Neill plays or plays thinking it's too complex. And it's really not.
No, not this one.
I know.
This
we'll explain the whole plot.
Very simple. This woman and her father, who is a widower, live on this hardscrabble farm. They have nothing. They have like a little lean-to that's on this land next to a rich guy. And the land is owned by James Tyrone, who can either sell the land, but he doesn't because he gets along with the father and they drink together and they have fun. And James Tyrone has always had a very soft spot for Josie. Now, Josie, the daughter, has the reputation of being the town tramp and the easy girl. But he knows, or we seem to think he knows it's not true. Even the father probably knows it's not true, but he plays along. And she doesn't want to let out the fact that she's not the girl everybody thinks she is.
It benefits her, though. Because she becomes that false popularity that sometimes women want.
No. Josie just wants to be left alone at a certain point, except by James Tyrone.
Right, but I also... Well, see, this is where the reading into the play...
Sure.
I always thought she didn't mind it because it brought attention to her and her father, and her father didn't mind it because it brought attention to him.
To her. Oh, to him. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I don't know, that's an interesting...
I always thought that was the attention part, because it's all about actor, and it's about people paying attention to people.
That's a cool reading. I wish you had seen this...
I'm sorry.
Whether it would fit with this reading of it. Cool.
So, keep going, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, but the basic thing is, are they going to get together? Can they? Because Jamie has such pain over something that happened to him, or something that he was kind of responsible for and let himself be irresponsible about, that he's ruining himself. And he really can't be saved. But perhaps for one night, Josie may be able to save him. Now, the father has these grand ideas, because he knows they love each other, to get them together and maybe even get them married, and also that means they get to keep the land, because
right.
They're the landlord. So there's all these things
someone
going on. But that's the whole plot. And,
yeah.
and yet, what it really is about love and forgiveness.
It's really a kind of turn-of-the-century soap opera.
Yes, but a tremendously moving one, if it's done right, because it's about these two people who love each other desperately, but it isn't going to probably work out. And also, it's about the father and daughter, and a very weird love story. Not in a sicko 20th century way.
Right, right.
But a deep father-daughter love that is as weird as anything, and yet works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so profound.
It's about the relationships. It's a very weird ménage à trois.
Yes, but not...
But
don't
not like that.
Yeah.
It's three people in pairs, in different pairs, relationship.
Yeah.
Because also a relationship between the father and James Tyrone is interesting.
Yeah, that's...
You know, that friendship and... But there's always that distance, because that friendship but landlord. You know what I mean? Because the father wants James Tyrone to like him too and like his daughter, but he doesn't want him to go too far, because you have to remember the father also thinks... I mean, this is one of the things that the father thinks, that, you know, if if Josie and James Tyrone get married, is he going to be able to stay?
Oh, that's right, yeah. I mean, so there's all these things come into play.
Very complex relationships.
Yeah, and it's so beautifully done. And this particular production, as I said, Kevin Spacey, I have some problems with him, even though he's obviously a very fine actor. And I wish he had done some other things with his performance. Eve Best, absolutely worth seeing. And the play is an absolute masterpiece.
What piece is that?
It's playing at Broadway's Brooks Atkinson Theater, A Moon for the Misbegotten. Even with Spacey's erratic performance, I don't think you will regret seeing this play inside Broadway. We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TogoTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
Moby Dick, Ulysses, War and Peace, the Bible. Big freaking deal. If you want to read a real book, a funny book, try Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, a collection of comedies by Dave Lefkowitz, me, the host of Dave's Gone By. Each play is stage-tested and relatively safe for public consumption. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, available from Holdo Books on the Dave's Gone By website. It's the Great American Something. We are the Great American... Something, I think. Don't you think, Jeff?
We're the great American baloney story.
Thanks so much, Jeff. You're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB. We're here on this April 15th. Well, it's the 15th for a couple more minutes, anyway. Our 216th episode, this one called The Peter Principle, because Peter Tork was on it. But we've had fun. We've been talking about Broadway. We were talking about music. Now, still more music, still more culture, but in kind of a sadder way. Lost a couple of people this week.
Lost in the stars.
Yeah, well, we didn't lose Kurt Weill. We lost him a long time ago. But we did lose Kurt Vonnegut. And, you know, as anybody who came of age...
That was very sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was 84, and he had a fall, I guess, a few weeks earlier, and that kind of really took him out of the running. But, boy, if you're like me of an age... I mean, I was probably a little past the generation that truly embraced him and discovered him. But what a mind-blowing writer.
So young.
But first time, I didn't even come at him from Slaughterhouse-Five, or I think I tried to read it when I was too young, and I had no idea what it was about. But it was Breakfast of Champions that did it for me.
Really? Oh, very interesting.
Just picking that book up in my late teens, early 20s, and seeing that there were pictures in it, that there would be sentences that would be a whole a word would be a whole paragraph. And it was so...
What word was that?
Any word. It could have been, well, in Slughouse 5, it would be "so it goes." But that was the phrase,
yes.
"So it goes." And the conversational tone that he took, like he's just taking the reader, sitting him down at the bar, talking to him and saying, "Okay, now let me tell you about Ice Nine. And
he
let me tell you about Trout Famidor."
He was a true American storyteller. More. I'm trying to think of who it is, and I can't think of it. I used to read that Will Rogers.
Yeah, but that's a kind of a satirical thing. Vonnegut was
right. But there's still in the tradition of great American storytellers
and satirists. Yeah, but it's a different kind. It's a storytelling that is so direct and so seemingly basic. It's like you're reading it, and it's like, my gosh, I can't believe the words are fifth grade words for the most part. I mean, he's not trying to string incredible sentences together. He's just laying it out, word, sentence, sentence, word, word, and then you're reading it, it's like, this is fantastic. There's something about it. Huh?
And so it goes.
Cat's Cradle, Breakfast of Champions, those are some of the great ones. Mother Night. This is a wonderful book. Please, if it's been a long, long time since you've read Vonnegut, get yourself some Vonnegut and start reading again. He's not a memory from the 60s and 70s. He's just a wonderful writer then and now.
And his books will live on, which is great. That's great.
Now, also living on, in kind of a different way, someone else that we lost. Well, I actually wanted to do the actor first, and then I'll...
Oh, okay, well... Personally, I just loved an actor who always was very dignified, and he, although played comedy as well as drama, and his name was Roscoe Lee Brown, and probably best known for his replacement of Benson on soap. He was the replacement butler on soap when Benson left to do a spinoff, and of course he was very stick in the mud rather than Benson's over the top. But Roscoe Lee Brown, I also remember him from, of all things, Logan's Run. He was the voice of a robot on Logan's Run. And he's one of those people, he should have had American Express commercial. Because people know his voice and his face. And they go, yeah. And you know, really.
Such a dignified voice. And such a mean and bearing. That's why.
Oh, he could be mean and he could be hilarious.
M-I-E-N, mean. The way. Okay, he could be mean, of course. But
oh, yeah.
I meant
the
other spelling of it. Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think. He always did Shakespeare.
And August Wilson. That was kind of his last. He was in Two Trains Running, the original production of it. And there's no mistaking him. He was definitely a talent. And I think we also remember him from Archie Bunker's Place, if not from the original All in the Family. He had a couple of interesting roles in there, too. Mm-hmm. Want to also say, in this week of nappy-headed hoes, that we
Oh, my God, that was the worst segue I could ever think of for this. Well, oh, my God, David.
Well, you know that...
Oh, my God!
Santa would be saying no ho-ho because we lost.
Oh, stop with those tiny bubbles.
Yeah, well, oh, I think I also heard the joke somewhere that he has now tiny bubbles in the bloodstream.
Oh, that's hard. Oh, David. David.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. Donald Tay Loy Ho, who was, by the way, not just Hawaiian. He was Hawaiian, Chinese, Portuguese, Dutch, and German.
So we say hello, aloha, aviva zane.
Goodbye. He died at age 76 in Honolulu. He's not one of the best or most amazing performers
but
ever.
He was probably like the quintessential Hawaiian performer.
Nobody really has been identified so much with a place as he has as a performer.
Well, not
well, I mean,
no,
Springsteen,
not,
Jersey,
right?
You know, Sinatra, Hoboken. But when you think Don Ho, it's that's Hawaii. Hawaii.
Did he ever leave? I don't think he ever left Hawaii.
Well, just to work in
but
Vegas.
He was
like
always
that.
On the sitcoms. Whenever they visited Hawaii,
yeah.
He was on every sitcom. He was on the Brady Bunch, go to Hawaii. Anyone went to Hawaii, Don Ho was there with a pooey pooey platter.
Yeah, exactly.
With poi, with his poi. I'm sorry.
Yeah, poo-poo platter filled with poi. That's poi and poo-poo together, as they should be. Now, the reason I'm even making a deal about Don Ho, and I'm sorry I forgot to bring in a CD of his music, was that it does also have a special meaning for me, because my wife, Joyce, and I went to Hawaii on our honeymoon.
How many years ago was that?
9 years ago. And we had a lovely time. And one of the things that I really, really wanted to do, because it was Hawaii, was go see the Don Ho show in his little supper club.
See, Dave really wanted to see a Ho show. And he ended up with Don Ho. It's like, what?
I was like, hon, this is the Ho I meant. We did see his daughter. She was kind of cute in a sort of
was
scary Christian way. No, it was like Wen Ho or Hu Ho. She had like this two-syllable full name.
I think her name should have been Skanky.
Young Ho. Lan Ho.
You're not even getting my joke. You're not even
Skanky Ho. I heard it. I think Lan Ho is funnier. Okay? But anyway.
Okay.
So, but it was nice that we saw him. And he...
Did he see you?
Yeah. In fact, he was asking if there were newlyweds, and it gave everybody, like, champagne if you were a newlywed and stuff.
You just went for the... You and Charlie go for the free stuff.
For the free... Well, it wasn't free. There was food. And we took a picture with him. He signed it. I had... That picture of Joyce and Don Ho and myself over my desk where I used to work for years, because it was such a nice memory of going to see him. And the interesting thing about
the photo now.
Watching him perform, it's in a box with all the stuff that from the place I used to work that I dread unpacking. So, even though it's 5.5 years ago.
Because he loved the place so much he worked at. He just can't wait to go back.
Exactly. Actually, I would if they asked, but that's another story for
another time. No, you'd go only if they begged.
Begged and paid more. So, anywho, but the thing about Don Ho back then was that he seemed 90 years, and he was sitting there at his little keyboard saying, "Tiny bubble, barely moving his lips, like along his tongue. I mean, he's just sitting there like, You figure he's going to keel over any minute, just either from boredom or sleepiness. And yet he still did a very nice show. It sounds like he was only in his mid-60s at that point. I don't think he even had the heart trouble yet. And it was good food. We had a lovely time. And we figured, you know, if we went back to Hawaii for our 10th anniversary, which we were sort of thinking about, we'd go back. We'd see Don Ho again, see how he's holding up. Well, now, he could pop by the cemetery. Put a little lay on his stone.
Hey, Don, how you holding up?
Yeah, not too well. As one of his more famous songs says, "I'll remember you," and we will for all his marginality in the music field. We'll remember Don Ho.
No, he made an impact. He had his niche.
Yeah,
and it was a small niche, but it was good.
Just like Dave's Gone By. On WGBB, we will be back to close the show on AM 1240 WGBB
it's
Freeport.
Bye bye time on Dave's Gone By soon.
Yeah, a couple of minutes. We got to wrap up the show.
Oh.
Right after this. Hewlett, Minuteman, press, is the place to make flyers, posters, bound reports, and of course, copies, 10% off, 10% off for Dave's Gone By, listeners, at Hewlett, Minuteman. Dave goes off. Well, unfortunately, we don't have really much time to
before
do this.
Before Dave goes off the air.
Going off to go home. We were going to talk about the whole Don Imus thing, which we did last week, but obviously so much more has happened this particular week.
Imus went off.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he was kicked off summarily.
He was fired.
By the hypocrites of CBS and MSNBC. Only because, the thing that irks me most, and I'll say this quickly as I can, is that he said what he said, it was stupid, and they gave him 2 weeks suspension, which I thought was, I think they should have given him a month, because he said something pretty nasty. So they gave him 2 weeks, that was their choice. Then, after the media firestorm, after Al Sharpton, after Jesse Jackson, after all, and then the sponsors, reacting to the rabble-rousing and the media hammering away, CBS and MSNBC said, oh, you know what? Well, we'll just cancel him.
Well, I thought that was wrong, especially since he went to the Rutgers women basketball team and did apologize. And I think he apologized from the heart. I think he really realized he did something that was a little bit...
I don't think he really apologized from the heart, because he would say something like that, every other week, just this one, someone happened to get really offended. I mean, I think he apologized from the heart that he's sorry it all happened, and that he realized if he had known that it would have been that offensive to people, he really would not have said it.
Right.
But I don't think he felt really deeply sorry for offending black people.
It is his job.
That wasn't that offensive.
But it is his job to shock people. And he thought this was a good shock thing, but, you know...
Shock and amuse. That's the thing. It didn't amuse.
And that was the problem. And he did apologize, and...
Again and again, the way... Because nobody can apologize once or twice anymore. Everybody's got to apologize 157 times.
Well, that's also... Well, the other thing is, I thought it was very... And I can't think of another word of an unsportsmanlike. Not to accept the apology. And say, you know...
The Rutgers team
Of Al Sharpton.
Oh, he's an animal.
I know. But of Al Sharpton, who is a very intelligent man. And
too intelligent.
Too intelligent to do what he did. Which I think he should say, okay, listen, why don't you, instead of just saying fire him, do what I said last week. And he should do some community service or do something good for the black community. You know,
the women community. It was more of a sexist comment than racist anyway.
You know, donate his time and talent to the Rutgers women's basketball team, and he apologized to them. They accepted it, and that was very gracious.
Yeah.
I mean, even though they didn't like it, it was directed specifically at them. So he should help them specifically, because he did damage them.
I think that's a wonderful idea.
But for him to get fired after doing what they pay him to do, mm-hmm, was not right, and not to accept an apology is very unsportsmanlike.
Oh, no, completely. I mean, it was just, you know, Sharpton was saying, I want him fired. He got him fired.
And I'm telling you, I bet you there's some things that Sharpton said that might offend you.
Oh, are you kidding me? Sharpton has a history
of saying
inflammatory things and then backing off and then learning to supposedly modify his speech. He helped incite the Crown Heights riots, the whole Tawana Brawley thing. There was a 1983 drug sting that he was pretty much nailed in, because it was involving some mobster who had connections to Don King that Sharpton also had connections to, and they had Sharpton almost dead to rights, but no charges were pressed. And basically a whole drug sting operation, and yet Sharpton just keeps rising from the ashes of his dung to come back and make more trouble and to run his mouth. Nobody touches him.
That's because people accept his apology. And for him not to accept someone else's, I think, is terrible.
Yeah. And I think it's terrible what CBS and MSNBC have done.
They wait so long.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't have been, honestly, it wouldn't have been quite so bad if they initially goes, you're awful, that's a fireable offense, you're fired.
Right. But what they thought, when they first heard it, they said, oh, that's bad, we're going to get some bad phone calls.
Right.
Let's suspend them for a week. As I said, I will give them a month. And then, as you said, community service. It's a great idea and a donation somewhere. But then to just sort of wait, ooh, the community's not liking this. And, ooh, our sponsors, fire him now, 5 days later. That's cowardly.
It was like a week and a half later.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it even 5 days? Like, it was week, 2 weeks, who knows? It was a long time after they were, let's see, well, we put him on suspension, let's see what else other people are going to do.
It's disgusting treatment, and I only hope that, A, they see the error, and ask him back after the firestorm has died down, and maybe he'll take it, or once the satellites get their act together, they say, okay, you're a shock jock, get on the air, shock everybody, offend everybody, because that's what you're there, offend them in an amusing and intelligent way.
Right, but not
say stupid
specifically.
Things. Yeah,
that's what I tell you. It's a difference when you.
Well,
when
no, you can make fun of Anna Nicole Smith before she died and say she was
right because
a fat
she's
drug addict.
But because she's in the public domain. The women's basketball team at Rutgers is really not in the public domain. These are not people who are seeking fame. Or they were just
they're seeing some level. They want to get on a Wheaties box, but
no. They wanted to win a basketball game, basically.
Okay.
They weren't seeking the Wheaties box. The Wheaties box comes and seeks you. I mean, yeah.
If you're an Olympic person, that's what you go for. If you're looking
an Olympic person, you go for the gold.
Yeah.
But and then you might get rewarded with a Wheaties box.
Yeah.
But that's not what you're specifically going for. You're going for a win. You're going for the gold, and you're not being put out there for public ridicule. That's for sure, and that's the problem when you offend people individually who are not in the public, domain.
Hmm.
They're not running for public office. They're not trying to get famous off of anything.
That was
the big problem, and if people put that into perspective, and especially since they accepted the apology, then I don't understand why Al Sharpton didn't. And I will talk, if Al Sharpton would like to talk to me about it, I will tell him what I think, because I like him. I think he's a very intelligent man, and I'm very disappointed that he took the low road on this.
He always takes the
low
road. But we've got to hit the high road, so got to thank our sponsors one more time. Why don't you do that, Jeff, please?
Okay, thank you, mortgagesrock.com,
yeah.
mortgagesrock.com, mm-hmm. And, of course, there's the Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway, and there is Performing Arts Insider.
You got it right, performingartsinsider.com, the place to go to find out more about that wonderful theater magazine.
And I must tell you that if you subscribe to Performing Arts Insider, you also get to read some beautifully written articles by David himself. David writes incredibly well. He reviews, don't you review stuff?
Sometimes there are my reviews, and there are also rumors of what's coming up on and off Broadway.
Oh, Dave's rumors are the best.
The rumors are good. Thank you, Jeff. That's really kind. Jeff,
Dave
I have
really
to say,
does
he does compliment
well.
my writing. He doesn't like my radio style so much, but he likes my writing.
Oh, I like your radio style. I'm not crazy about it, but I like it. I don't like your TV style.
Oh, well, okay, let's just knock your mic out for a moment.
Ow!
Anyway, got to do a couple of quick shout-outs. Shout-out to Jim Nabley of the Randy Bandits. Do you remember when you were there for that show?
No.
Very good group.
But I would like to do a shout-out to Fancy Schmancy Balloons, which forgot.
Sorry.
Thank you. Because we haven't even mentioned them all show, I think.
I
think we skipped over it.
Well, tell everybody about Fancy Schmancy.
For all your party needs, 516-797-3229. But no one listens to the show anyway. So
and, yes, now may I do my shout-out to Jim Nadley of the Randy Bandits. He's going to have a play being done at Manhattan Class Company this coming season.
Really?
In January. His play, Spain, is going up.
Jim Nadley, Spain, we adore you.
Now, that was the best pun of the night. Not even being all the inches stuff. That was very good. Thank you. Also, letting everybody know that Neil Sedaka, one of our most famous guests that we've ever had, is going to be at Joe's Pub on May 2nd. And, don't forget everybody. Peter Tork. He's doing a bunch of things on Long Island. I can't even keep him
straight.
Peter
Tork is going to be in Easter Target on Friday.
Right.
And then he's going to be at the Patchogue Center for the Performing Arts on Saturday.
Yes, indeed.
And then he's going to be
Baby Blues or something?
No, at the Loving Lounge, the Leggy Lounge.
The Leggy Lounge.
On 14th Street in the city on Sunday, signing records, probably an evening, but they'll be playing his CD all evening.
Yeah.
What lounge was it?
You find it on East
Ladies
14th
lounge,
Street. And you know what? If you go to his website, I'm sure you'll find everything. PeterTork.com. So,
and hey, he was a monkey.
That's right. And can't go without saying, I love you, I love you, I love you to my beautiful and wonderful and adorable and my doctor wife, Joyce. She's just the best.
Can I say I love you, I love you, I love you to someone?
Yeah, of course.
Who can I say that to?
Your dad.
Oh, I love my dad.
Okay.
In Florida.
Yeah.
You can't hear that. He was on the radio show.
Yeah, he was either that or he was on the Little Big Time that we did here before.
No, he was
on the regular show?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I wish him a refuah shlema. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I hope he does get better. Anyway, in the coming weeks, we have some other stuff coming up on Dave's Gone By, including director Bob Kalfin is going to be our guest next Sunday. He directed the original production on Broadway of Yentl. He's also doing the off-Broadway show Marie Antoinette, The Color of Flesh. So he's had a
few years. Don't lose your head over it.
Yeah. Bum, bum. Kind of different from that Sofia Coppola movie. Reminders that you can hear a vintage episode of Dave's Gone By every Thursday and Saturday night at 11 on live365.com. And it's a comedy radio channel there, dfsxradio.com. Find out everything you need to know at my website, davesgoneby.org, and it's also the place to find out about the episodes you can hear free anytime, day or night, on theaterpod.com.
Is that davesgoneby.org?
It's davesgoneby.org. We will be back next Sunday, April 22nd, 2007, with the 217th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. We're going to close with a monkey song that I dedicate to the folks at Stony Brook, not to mention Peter Tork, of course. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night, better weather, and may all your hoes have curly heads.
And gone by.
Stepping stone. I'm not your stepping stone. You're trying to make your mark in society. You're using all the tricks that you used on me. You're reading all them high fashion magazines. The clothes you're wearing, girl, are causing public scenes. A better I'm not your stepping stone. I'm not your stepping stone. Oh! Not your stepping stone. Not your stepping met your girl, you didn't have no shoes, but now you're walking around like your front page news. You've been awful careful about the friends you choose, but you won't find my name in your book of who's who. That said, I'm not your stepping stone.
Oh, girl, not me.
I'm not your stepping stone.